That's right. That was Dead & Company, George Porter Jr. on bass and lead vocals with Sugar Ray that he does so well. That was from February 24th, 2018, the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, the rescheduled show that we did. And I am lucky enough to have with me here Swamp Daddy. Thank you for being the New Orleans influence you are here.
Well, you know it, man.
And George, really appreciate you coming in, man. I know long flight today and you got stuff going on this weekend, but George Porter Jr. in the house with us today.
Yeah, you're right. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I just want to thank you for coming in too, George. From you know, I've been playing your music here on this station for 20 years, and it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here to do this little talk, and we really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, we just heard you playing with that, with the Dead & Company, and
yeah,
you've got a show coming up here on Kauai on New Year's Eve with some of those guys, Bob Weir and our great friend and friend of KKCR, Bill Kreutzmann, local resident here, and sounds like you had a nice warm-up there with the Dead & Company not too long ago.
Yeah, well, you know, that was really cool about... I was told that those guys never did that before, you know. They never used to have people come and sit in, you know.
Not too often.
But yeah. I got a call from both Mickey and Billy, you know, saying that, man, you know, you should come in, you know. And I think Mickey had said, yeah, come in and do a song. And Billy said, no, you got to do a couple of songs.
Yeah.
And of course, you've had some association with Bill in another project.
Well, both Bill and me. In fact, I played with Mickey solo project before playing with Bill in the Seven Walkers project.
Yeah, that Seven Walkers was so good. And for me, some of the Hunter tunes, right, that he wrote that had some New Orleans vibe to it, man. That was a real, real special short-lived band. Huh?
Right. That was good. It was good. And it was a special thing, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, almost a Kauai formed band in a way, because, you know, Papa Molly had come over here, and then, you know.
Yeah, that's where it started over here.
It really did, yeah. It was supposed to be just a short-lived, you know, Halloween band, and it turned into a project. Once they got you on board, then it was really, you know, it was like time to record.
And I got to say, for me personally, you know, being a big Deadhead and being a huge New Orleans music fan, having that confluence of you coming in, George, right, with Billy and the boys playing. And like I said, some of those Hunter songs, too. It was a real special, special moment.
How did that come about? I mean, how did you end up getting involved with that project?
Well, an original bass player was Reed Mathis.
From Tea Leaf Green, right? Yeah, Reed.
And I believe what it was, how it happened was... it was a Tipitina's one night, and it was one of those Mardi Gras kind of feeling gigs, I think, pre-Mardi Gras. And we playing on the one stage with Malcolm and, I think, Billy Ayuso and a couple other, you know, players. And during the solo section of the song, Malcolm kind of eased over across the stage to me and say, hey, man, you want to play some gigs with me and Bill? I said, Bill who?
Yeah,
you know, he said, Bill Kreutzmann, you know, I say, well, you know, give me, you know.
What's it pay?
I don't really talk business in a nightclub.
Right, exactly.
Call me at home in the morning, you know, and talk about it, you know. So he called me in a couple of days, and I think he was going to bring me out. Because they needed somebody that next weekend or something like that. And it was going to be like a one-off, you know, I was going to run out, play a couple of night hits with them. And then,
right.
And once I did it, you know, and then actually I had to, you know, I had some of those Dead songs under my fingers, but not as many as that the Seven Walkers did.
Yeah, because that's a huge repertoire, right? I'm sure being familiar with some of it, but they got a lot of songs out there.
You know, really, I just got a book the other day a friend of mine gave me for my birthday present.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's only two songs in that book.
You do? Yeah.
So I haven't covered not one-tenth of their material at this point.
And you had known Malcolm for a while
I've been knowing Malcom for a while.
For a long time, yeah.
But, so, you know, after we played the gigs, and I got back home, you know, I get a call from Malcolm saying, Bill wants you in the band, but you know, so you think.
Well, Bill loves New Orleans music. I know that from a from a personal a viewpoint there. I mean, he's wild about it. He just loves it.
I think some of that too, Billy being the unique style of drummer that he is, he kind of has that New Orleans backbeat, but talking to him about it too, he said, you know, when you were playing with him at Seven Walkers, he kind of stepped up that, whatever, on the one, you know, New Orleans kind of.
Yeah, Bill's a loose player. I love the way Bill plays. You know, he plays loose. He's almost like a jazz drummer, you know.
Yeah.
So when I was with the Seven Walkers band, I'm definitely a pocket player. So, you know, me and him started locking in more, you know. And, you know, by the time we finished, we came to playing the last note, we had become very musically entangled, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, speaking of that, you come from, you know, the birthplace of rhythm and blues, New Orleans, and you started out, you know, early when that was, you know, in the genesis of that in the early 50s, and you were probably a young boy then. But who were some of the first cats that you got a chance to actually play with, create your style?
Well, I believe the style that I eventually ended up with kind of more or less kind of was created with those four pieces of that, the Meters, the guys. Prior to playing with the Meters, I was just learning. I was just playing music with, any and every musician that, you know, that would call. And then after we'd get off my little gig that I played that night, I would go to a club somewhere, maybe two, and go sit in and play with, you know. But when I was a kid, in 17, 18, 19 years old, well, actually, this shit may be like 15, 16, 17, right. I was playing swing. I was playing bebop, not necessarily as much bebop, as you can call it, but it was definitely, I was swinging, on a nightly basis. I would, the gig might start off swinging, and by the time we get to the third set, you know, which is maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, we'd be playing some really night ward, and Oop Oopy Doo, Serious Street, Ico and stuff, you know, but the gig would always start off swinging, you know.
What years were you talking about then?
Well, I was 17.
Oh, yeah.
So I was 16, 17 years old.
64. 63.
I'm 71 as of day after Christmas.
You were born in what,
1947?
And, you know, hearing you talk about jumping from show to show or band to band playing with people, seems like you still do that. You're like the businessman in show business down in, Jazz Fest time or something.
Warren Hands.
Warren for sure. But man, I been to so many New Orleans shows, Jazz Fest time, where it's like George is playing the 8 o'clock gig here and the midnight gig there and the 2 a.m. gig over here. Right? You get around, brother.
Yeah, I've been having some fun. Next year I'm cutting back.
Yeah. You've definitely played with a lot of people. So you got the Meters got started when you and Zigaboo. What, did you go to school together, did you first meet?
We were kind of raised as cousins.
Oh yeah.
I believe when I was around 9, maybe 10, Zig's brother Clinton was a violinist in the New Orleans Symphony,
mm-hmm.
and he was like one of the first black violinists in the New Orleans Symphony that have a first seat.
Oh yeah.
So he was like one of the guys who got the first call, you know, when come up. He was kind of teaching us, both Zig and I, piano, you know, at the same time, which didn't work really well. But we were always raised up as cousins until we found out much later in life that we weren't really blood cousins.
Kind of like cousins. That's very common here in Hawaii. Yeah. Same kind of thing. But you didn't really start off as a bass player. Obviously, you were telling me
I started off as a classical guitarist.
Right,
that's what I studied. You know,
And learning cowboy songs.
And learning.
But then you actually, you're multi-instrumental, obviously, because then you were playing drums for a while.
I played drums in school because we didn't
have guitars.
I brought a guitar to school one time, and I was told not to do it again.
And so then you eventually picked up the bass and invented funk.
And the rest is history. Yeah, that's right.
Which is, we all thank you for that, is one thing. But so that was like, you know, but somewhere in the mid-60s or so, because you guys, the Meters formed in what year was that?
Well, the band got its name, I believe, in 67.
Yeah.
But we were playing together for at least 2.5 years before we started working with Alan, you know.
Right. And then Alan... You guys came up with a new name when...
Well, the name, you know, five names was thrown in a hat.
Oh, really?
One was picked out by Alan's partner. But we never saw the name, though.
Marshall, yeah.
But they just told you?
Marshall. We just told you. Oh,
so it's Marshall Seahorn.
It's to meet us.
Apropos, though, man.
That's your name.
Yeah, apropos, fits.
Right, yeah, and so you know, I want to talk a little bit more about New Orleans music and stuff like that too. And you have the band you currently have, one of the bands, I guess, the Running Partners.
Right, Running Partners is my somewhat bread and butter right now.
Right, right.
And tell us a little bit about them, guys. I've taken two members of the Running Partners band and started a trio called a Porter Trio, which is playing more kind of. Oh, I don't know why you're putting the correct name on it, but it's kind of a little bit more jazzy, kind of
right. Fusion
funk, you know.
Oh, right.
You know, Running Partners is like straight ahead. I'm pretty much an R&B funk band.
But you don't have a keyboard in the trio, right?
No, there's no keyboard. Well, no, it's a keyboard.
Like, oh, so
it is a keyboard.
Like Chick Corea kind of style?
I believe it's
funkier.
More, I mean, it's funkier than Chick.
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of, yeah.
And I know, sometimes besides the Running Partners, you do that Foundations of Funk thing, too,
Foundation
right?
Foundation of Funk thing was with...
Is that Zig?
Zig, myself. And, you know, we've been doing that gig, I think probably in the last year and a half, we've done maybe 7 shows, and we've had 7 different keyboardists, guitarists, you know, playing the band. We've had...
Ian does that sometimes, right?
Ian, well, the last one we've done at Lockin' was with Ivan... Tony Hall,
yeah, Tony,
and Ian,
right, yeah.
Ian, no,
yeah. Oh, yeah,
and
right.
then somewhere during the middle of the set, Bill Kurtzman, Mickey Hart,
John Mayer, Bobby, right, all came there, yeah,
the whole band.
That was a crowded stage. I got some of that we can play in a minute too, man. If you guys want to hear it, but.
Yeah, why don't we take a little break for a second?
Yeah, I'm gonna take a break and play a little bit of that. Maybe I'll play some of that Lock and Foundations of Funk with some of the dead guys sitting in.
That'd be interesting. I have never heard any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if I can work that out here.
I tell you, Mickey Mick! Bob Lear! John Mayer! I told you it was coming! sing. Everybody sing. Everybody sing. Everybody sing.
It's hard to fade out of that, George, right? I was saying, oh, maybe I'll clip it there, but man, tough to do.
All right, I hear some meters in the background.
Yeah, I figured I'd put a little meters back in the bed music, man. So that, you know, that show was from Lock-In in August of this year, where right. The Foundations of Funk with George and Zig, of course, Ivan and Ian Neville, and then Tony Hall on guitar.
Did I see Leo? Yeah. Was Leo in that too?
No.
Cyril was up there, though, right?
Cyril was up there.
Cyril, yeah.
So we had three Nevilles.
That's pretty easy to do these days, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're all over the place.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. And speaking, you know, so yeah, definitely the Foundations of Funk, you and Zig. So you guys grew up together, and then that, you know, you finally get to the point where you're hooked up with Alan Toussaint and you form the Meters. And you guys were kind of really doing a lot of instrumental stuff.
Earlier. Instrument. We did three albums that were basically most 90% was instrumental stuff.
So what kind of influenced that sound? Was it just you guys just come out of yourself organically, the four of you together? I mean, obviously Art had some, you know.
I never kind of put my notes on where, you know, I know that each one of us had our own individual listening habits musically.
Right.
I know for a fact myself, I listen to way more New Orleans stuff, Earl King and Snooks Eaglin.
Snooks.
Fats Domino and Huey Smith and the Clowns. That's the stuff that I was bred on.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I know Leo played with a lot of those guys, some of those guys.
And Art.
Because Leo's a year older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, Art's 10 years older than I am.
Right.
But
he was, Art was really involved with that.
Art was a part of that original project.
Right.
Yeah.
So he brought that kind of thing in there, and then you guys just, I guess you just had it in you.
Yeah, I mean, Zigaboo was a part of the new school.
Right.
You know, because he didn't start playing when he was a kid. He started playing when he was a teenager. His influences were definitely the guys like Smokey Johnson.
Right.
And there was a drummer that played with the Hawkettes was called Junie Boy. And that was one of the players. But then there were a few other drummers that Art was involved with that used to rehearse up at Art's house up on Fallon Street that Zig stayed across the street from. So he heard all of the different influences from the Night War drummers, from the Seventh War drummers, you know, and he would probably be considered easily say that Zig was the first 13th War drummer.
So from the 7th to the 9th to the 13th, you know, hearing you talk about Snooks being an influence, man. Snooks playing the Rock and Bowl just on and on, you know, for so many years. And of course, he passed a few years ago. But man, I saw a bunch of good shows with you and Snooks and them playing at the Rock and Bowl too, right?
Yeah,
New Orleans,
yeah. A lot of R&B music I learned from Snooks, and I learned them right there on the stage.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I got a book of songs to say, "Well, this is what we gonna play this week." There weren't no set lists with Snooks. You know, he just started playing, and then he would take requests, you know. He knew a million songs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. How about Fats, who unfortunately we lost, you know, very recently. Did you have much involvement with Fats? Did you get a chance to play with him?
I have a great story about Fats Domino. You know, I used to play with a band called Irvin Bannister and the All-Stars. And Irvin was the guitar player that played on Danny White's Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, that solo on the guitar solo.
Right on.
And that was his claim to fame, you know, that solo, right. You know, put him on a thing where he was actually maintained a functioning band. And we were playing a club across the street from, we were playing this club called the Cindy Club. Well, on the corner, right on across the street, on the corner, there was a thing called Charlie's Corner. And Charlie's Corner was like what they would consider back in the days of the key club. But they didn't have a key. You know, the guy just would knock on the door, and the guy on the other side would open a little window and look out, and if he, you know, if he recognized you, you got to be in.
Right.
Well, it was like the exclusive club for most of the, very private, but you know, guys like Art Neville, Fats Domino, you know, Earl King. Earl never went there. He hated the club. So he was too stuck up for him. But, but you know, it was like the elite, you know, of the neighborhood. All of the Zulu Social Pleasure Club guys used to hang out up there, you know.
Right.
So, but almost on a weekend, on Saturday nights, you know, when Fats would, you know, hang out and they get a good buzz going, and usually around, you know, we were usually in around 2 o'clock in the morning at the Cindy Club. You know, Fats would usually come over about 10, 15 minutes to 2 and want to sit down and play. And when he stops playing, it's like a little after 3.
Yeah.
So we, you know, our 15 minutes set, you know, just turned into an hour 15 minutes, you know. But that was, you know, I never, other than that, that's the only time I ever got to play with Fats, you know. But
yeah. No. Well, I like to hear the stories where the guys would, they'd be on opposite corners playing two different bands, and then they would, when they would take a break, they would switch rhythm bands, sections.
Yeah.
Well, rhythm section.
I mean,
would
it
go.
Seems like that still happened into, you know, the 25 years I've been going to Jazz Fest or whatever. Seems like that happens a lot, right?
Well, it still does. You know? Yeah.
But this was a thing because they would play till, you know, they would be playing like all night long till 9 o'clock in the morning. So they were to get more of a you know, to stop from being bored from playing in one club for that many hours, you know, they would, you know, I mean, Dr. John, you know, he tells those stories, and other guys too. I've read stories about it, you know, the guys that, you know, played the Do Drop In, of course, you know.
Oh, yeah, the drop. Well, see, I got to see the you know, last probably 2 years of the Do Drop, you know.
Did you ever get to know Guitar Slim, or he was gone before?
No,
you,
he was gone. Well,
before you were
he was gone before I got to start hanging there.
Right, right.
You know, my influences through the Dewdrop was Earl King.
Earl King, yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
Tommy Ridgely.
Tommy Ridgely, yeah.
And then there was this man, one of the new ones, and I can't ever remember his name, but he was the drummer in the band, in the house band at the drop. And doing the shows, and then when he finished the show, he would go up front and he would cook beans. And he would cook the red beans for the next day. You know, he would put his beans on that night, and you know, cook his beans, and then he'd go home and come back the next day, and he was the chef.
Hey, well, you know a lot of musicians that were chefs as well.
Yeah,
I'm one of them. Yeah, hey, sometimes you got to pay the bills.
And you know, just listening to some of that Foundations of Funk and talking about it a little bit, man, you can really tell. You know, we were just saying different people in the band and stuff, and one of the influences kind of with the Dead too. Seems like George, you're pretty comfortable just going out there with music, right? Which is something the Dead did a lot, right? And it seems like in the Meters and funk scene, doing a lot of instrumental things. Man, you can slide from anything into anything else. Seems like you're pretty comfortable like that. Huh?
Yes, I am. I'm kind of. I've always said that I was a musician. I'm not a. You know, people want to stick those labels on you. Or use the funk musician. I play music. You know,
right.
and I'm not afraid. That, you know, I told Lamona Judd and her sister Cam seen the Funky Meters at Tipitina's one night, and she told me that the bass player, I can't think of his name, told her that she should come see us when we were there. So I told her, I said, well, I know y'all got him up there, you know, but if you ever need a bass player, you can call me, you know, I'm cool.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. country music.
That's the only gig I haven't had yet is a country gig.
Yeah, that's
I mean, I guess Jimmy Buffett kind of came close to it, you know.
Well, you know, like the Running Partners rock that out in the country, right? I mean, I know that's a meter song, that's but man, music, you know, it seems like you really have some soul and feeling into that one, right?
Yeah,
when you play that with the Partners.
I totally rearranged that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Leo didn't like it, you know, he's the original.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that. Yeah. Sorry, Leo, I take that back. That was me. Sorry, but that was a bad move.
Freddie. So, yeah, you were talking about the funky meters for a second there. You mentioned that. So the meters, they kind of disbanded a little bit in the late 70s, right? And then you kind of, but you wanted to keep that sound going. So how did that come
about? Well, when the original band disbanded, basically when Art left and went off with his brothers.
Right.
To start the Neville Brothers slip. It was like it was a bad penny that kind of went out on them world markets that the meters changed their name to the Neville Brothers, and the Neville Brothers was going to be continuing on to that whole thing, but
wasn't that your original name though the Neville
the
Sound
the
or something
Neville
like
Sound Band, but yeah. There was only one Neville.
Yeah, right. It's just art, right. Yeah. But that was before the hat drawing of the meters.
Lordy, lordy, lordy.
Anyway, go on with the...
yeah, you're right. It's getting there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all going to be in the first chapter of my book.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the meters... We're not the Neville Brothers.
We're not the Neville Brothers, but...
at all.
For Zig and Leo and myself... with a new keyboard player attempted. We hired Willie West as a singer for the front band. But I was kind of like not interested in continuing in the direction that that the band was going at that point.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of like really had abandoned what I thought was the better music, was that instrumental stuff that we had done. And we weren't playing any of that music on the first three records.
Oh, wow.
You know, because at this point, we were trying to attempt to compete with all of the other, you know...
The hype that was there.
More of a pop.
The pop, yeah, and the top R&B, you know,
right.
Chasing after a dream, you know.
Soul, the such.
Yeah, the soul things. And I was, you know, I kind of lost interest, you know, and so I backed away. You know, just started snorting a lot of cocaine and just, you know.
I really liked it, even after the Funky Meters, you know, got back together. The PBS thing was pretty good, too, with that trio. You seemed like a trio was a little tighter, man, right?
The Porter Baptiste Stokes was a serious idea. You know, Brian Stokes and myself, you know, thought really hard about it and wanted to be more musical.
Yeah.
And Russell Baptiste, you know, Russell Baptiste is a genius.
Oh, yeah. He's got a personality on him, too. Yeah. Huh? Say what?
He's got a mouth on him.
Yeah. Hey, and Russell, we're saying that with the most respect, brother, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But just a lot of fun in those years,
I'll tell anyone, man, any day, man, that Russell Baptiste is a genius.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a badass for sure.
And he had musical ideas that, you know, that... You know, kept me on my toes. You know, kept me in there, and it was always good.
Yeah. That's what you want with a drummer, right?
Yeah. You know,
as a bass player.
I had lots of fun with that band.
Yeah.
You know, by that time I was a sober person too. You know,
right.
So I was looking at, you know, I sit back and trying to look at what my progression has been after I got sober, which is now 31 years.
Congratulations, George.
And, it's like, you know, I just see that musically, I'm still having fun. I'm still enjoying stuff. And the answer to your original question is that, yes, I can just dive into a piece of music and, you know, or any kind of music and just be musical.
Well, you know, when you start off
with it, right?
When you start off as a classical guitarist and then become one of the inventors of funk, you pretty much got everything covered, I think. So that was great. So yeah, so that Art comes into this, back into the situation, and that becomes the Funky Meters.
Yeah, well, when we came when Leo moved back, Leo was still in New Orleans at this point. And my daughter it was actually my daughter that said that Russell Baptiste had been, you know, kind of courting my daughter, And he was putting in her ear that you need to talk to your daddy, because he didn't talk to everybody else, Art and Leo, and, you know, they want to play together. And he said, your daddy is the holdout, you know, and you need to talk to your daddy and get your daddy back on this page, you know. Yeah, because Russell, as a drummer, he wanted to be in that seat.
I'm sure, right? Everybody wants to be in that seat, man. That's the seat to be in.
Yeah, and so, you know, they got my ear, and I said, okay, let's give it a shot, you know.
Yeah.
And then probably a year after that, you know, Leo left the band.
Right.
And went off to California. And and at that point, the band had started making noise, you know. And so we brought in Brian Stoltz.
Yeah, Brian Stoltz, right.
Came in as a guitar player. And, you know, for the next, well, it must have been 20 years or something like that, that the band.
It was solid. Right?
Yeah.
Solid, long, long run. And I think just in my experience in that era, you guys were so well received just because people were having that Meters Jones that had been gone so long. And I know, you know, like when you guys got back together at that Fesshead thing in California at the first Meters reunion, right, in 2000 or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, and then again at the Fest and stuff. But yeah, those were, I mean, for me anyway, Funky Meters really captured that vibe. And you know, one thing for me that's so funny, and you probably have a story about this, but you know, the George Matters shirts, right? So like the way I heard it is like, you know, the Art Matters, right, being
right,
like
right.
Art, you know, stuff, but like Art had the Art Matters shirt on,
right, right.
So hey, wait a minute, man. And then I know some guys printed up them George Matters shirts,
it was those Fesshead boys.
Yeah, that, it was the, and you know, just a quick
Trip Billings, man.
Yeah, Trip, you got those. I want to give a shout out to both my Fesshead crew people, right, fond in my heart, as well as the Blender people, because we all know George, you know, rules the scene for us. So thank you so much for your support over the years, both with the, you know, Trip and Chunky and Joe, and then Fesshead people, and my buddy Jakey, and then the, you know, maybe more newly formed, only, you know, 10 or 12 years old, the Blender crew too.
Yeah,
and I know you played a bunch of shows with Steve Marsh when he did his Cowbus thing,
right,
and
right,
the other
right,
stuff,
right?
Right? So thank you so much for sending your love our way, brother, because we dig that. But
yeah, it was good. It was fun. I see, you know, I see Big Joe all the time.
Yeah.
He's in New Orleans now, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, just, but those George Matters shirts, such a special message for me, right? Good stuff.
Well, it's true. George does that.
Hey, so, you know, if you guys don't mind, I was thinking of playing one more song. You cool with that? I've played this before, but, you know, and I talked to you about this, George, this Fesshead party in 2007 from April 28th during, you know, Jazz Fest, Tipitina's French Quarter. I don't remember exactly what anniversary it was, but the Fesshead guys have been around for a while, right?
Yeah,
but this Fesshead party was really special for me being down there. And you had a great cast of characters. I think John Groves was there and Henry Butler, right? And,
yeah.
And the rest of the running partners at that time. But I got a really nice Just Kiss My Baby, which is going out to my baby Laura Christine here that I wanted to play.
Yeah,
so
right.
Maybe I'll dial that up quick, and then we can chat, you know, again just a second here. All right, here we go with some live George Porter Jr. from the Fesshead party at the shortly-lived Tipitina's French Quarter.
Yeah, that didn't last long.
No, man, they never do, right? The Tips Warehouse and the Tips Ruins, they had a whole bunch of... And, you know, just one quick note, thank goodness Galactic bought Tipitina's, huh?
Yeah, man,
maybe we can get some good shows back again there. People getting paid and stuff, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're right there.
Actually getting paid.
My baby's gone. I feel so friendly. What to do? I Just kiss my baby. Just kiss my baby. Just kiss my baby. It's got to be that way, be that way. Got to be that way. It's got to be that way, be that way. Got to be that way. You got to be that way, be that way. Got to be that way. It's got to be that way, be that way.
Listening to KKCR Hanalei and KQA Kilauea. This is your Kauai Community Radio Station here on the Grateful Dead and Friends Show with George Porter Jr. and Swamp Daddy. I got a couple notes coming up as well. You know, this New Year's show that was sold out, there are still some tickets that are available since they moved venues. And so I can give a link out. It's on the CID events Rising Up to Paradise page. But I'll give people the URL or the link. There still are tickets available. Yep, there's more tickets available, a limited number, so if people are still trying to do that, that George will be playing that, and Billy and you know, Bob and Taj Mahal and the rest of the crew, there's still some re-release tickets available, so I'll throw out the link in a little bit, and I also got a special announcement about that coming up a little bit, too. This KKCR program is supported in part by George Porter Jr., and our sustaining members, along with Hawaii Compassionate Care, Papayas, and Edible Hawaii Magazine.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
A warm mahalo to our friends at Papayas Natural Foods. Papayas is now located at 4-901 Kuhio Highway, Kapa'a, in Waipoli Shopping Center. Papayas believes in supporting a healthy community. PapayasNaturalFoods.com, 823-0190.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
Mahalo for supporting your Kauai Community Radio Station. Once again, we got George Porter Jr. and Swamp Daddy in the house. Chat a little bit more, and then we're going to cut George loose and go get some food. But, George, thanks again for coming up. Really appreciate your time, brother.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, right.
Yeah, thanks, George. It's been a real treat. And we're going to be... We'll be putting together a little thing and replaying this conversation next Friday on the Mardi Gras Soul Review.
Cool. We got that to look forward to. And again, you know, and I know, you know, it's sold out quick and there's stuff going on. But George, you know, is of course playing here for the New Year's show that CID is putting on.
And they've added more tickets.
So if people are, you know, looking for tickets for that,
also,
they had somebody released.
In case people may not have heard, the venue did change.
Yep.
So you'll want to go.
It's up at the Princeville Golf Course area now.
The old Prince Course.
The old Prince Course, right.
So that's somewhere where we are now.
It's pretty close.
It's very close to here. We're in Princeville, and, you know, it's a couple miles away from here. Yeah, it's real close.
Yeah, the actual, well, this golf course is a different golf course, but now they redesigned it and they connected. Anyway, it's just down, we're right next to the golf course.
So, you know, we're
in the neighborhood.
I'll read this off real quick. If people are looking for tickets for some of them that have been, you know, re-released, the website is cidentertainment.com/events/rising-up-2-paradise-nye-2018. That's a mouthful, right? But you can give me a call here at the station, 826 77871. If you need that link, we can get it to you. They just released some tickets that are available, and I got a couple other notes coming up about that as well. So, okay. Yeah, well, right on, man. I'm really excited, you know, to have you here, and I know you've had some experience playing with Billy before, like we were talking about in Seven Walkers and other things, and with Foundations of Funk that we listened to a little bit from that Lock-In Festival.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, yeah, I can't, you know, I wanted to ask you about some experiences with all the great New Orleans musicians and everything. Of course, we don't have time for that. You know, we've covered a few already. I was just wondering, maybe, do you got any experience? I'm sure you do, because he's played with everybody going way back with Mac, you know, Mac Rebinac,
mm-hmm.
Also known as Dr. John. Have you had much musical experiences with Dr. John? Or?
Well, the original Meters recorded two records with Mac.
Right.
The Right Place, Wrong Time record, which was the most popular one, and the Desert Tivoli Bonnaroo project, which was my favorite of the two.
Right. That's a great album.
You know, we never did extensive work with Mac after those two records.
So. Right, but those are two pretty heavy records. Which, of course, I knew that, but I kind of wanted you to get into that. You know, when I told you before about the Robert Palmer thing, that was when I kind of first got exposed to Meters. I had kind of forgotten about the Right Place, Wrong Time, and that actually was the first time I was exposed to the Meters. Yeah, yeah. And my older brother had that record, and I went, "Oh my God, who's this band?" Back
I kind of think that's how. Got Robert to New Orleans, that the Right Place, Wrong Time album. Because
exactly,
he came to New Orleans. He just had songs, you know, and him and his acoustic guitar, and
Robert Palmer we're talking about, yeah.
And the band pretty much arranged that record for him.
Yeah, and maybe didn't get enough credit for it.
We didn't get any.
As is always the case.
And actually, that was like his first. That was it two or three albums, I think, that you guys played on? Yeah.
No, we played on the first one.
And
we didn't play it. We came back for a second record, but I don't believe we actually.
I thought you were on the Sneaking Sally Through the Alley album.
That's
well.
The first one, yeah.
But, you know, yeah, okay. And then, yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, yeah, and that's where Lowell George was all from Little Feet was also.
I think those guys did, like. I think we did six tracks on a 10-track record.
Right,
they did the last four, you know.
Yeah, but that Right Place, Wrong Time, that was definitely something that put everybody, and put kind of helped put New Orleans music back on the map after there had been a lull in the 60s there, you know, after such a fantastic, you know, run of hit records throughout the 50s and early 60s, you know. And,
right.
So, you know, that was a...
Oh, sorry, man.
No, I'm sorry. Lowell George is on Just Kiss My Baby.
Really?
I see him playing guitar on slide guitar on Lowell Just Kiss My Baby.
Oh, wow,
the original
man.
Just Kiss My Baby?
Yeah.
I'll have to dial that up in a little bit.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's a good piece of trivia.
You know, speaking about, Mac and stuff, too.
When Robert showed up, when this record label sent him there, the Meters had already started recording Rejuvenation record.
Oh, yeah.
And so when we weren't working with Robert, we was doing our own project at the time. And Lowell was a big fan of the Meters. And so he just kind of hung around, stayed in town, you know, and him and Leo got together. And Leo invited him to come play something. And he came and played.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that story. And I guess maybe that's a good place for us to let George...
One more thing. You know, when you were talking about Mac, you know, Dr. John, when they had that Dr. John tribute show, I think it was at the Sanger, Jazz Fest a couple years ago. Remember when all the different artists came up? And I think you went up with Zig, right?
Junko Partner
or something. And Billy and Anders, you know, were there. And Springsteen and John Fogerty. But I think that was a real special thing. You know, sometimes we don't honor people until after they pass away or whatnot. And it was really nice to have Mac in his, you know, element and be surrounded by so much love and so many New Orleans and other musicians to appreciate
absolutely.
That music.
The company that was doing that was doing a really cool idea what they was doing. They were supposed to be doing the Meters that next year after we did Mac. I know. It ended up somewhere else. I'm not sure exactly.
Fell through.
But, I mean, no, yeah, because, you know, I mean.
Well, that would be a great thing to do.
Unfortunate things about it is that some of the meters, business things just always kind of interferes with things moving forward.
With the music, right, sometimes.
Right, and so.
Well, you've all got a lot of different projects, too.
But the project shouldn't matter. You know, it should, no. You know, when I think about the music that was presented by those four guys.
Oh yeah.
You know, I just only thing I can come up with is that our individual politics, you know, interfered with what was conceived as really music.
Yeah.
And that.
And that happens, right? Yeah, man.
Well, right. I'll tell you what, though. You know, however it ended up or however it keeps going on, that is definitely music that will live on forever. And it's been used by the beat. You know, I mean, people have used the rhythms and the beats and, you know, hip-hop music. And, I mean, it just lives on in so many different ways.
Yeah,
you know,
it's going to continue. I mean, and I'm believing that the collaboration with Zig and myself, Foundation of Funk, is gonna you know, like I said, keep the mantle interesting and moving forward with the meter idea, musical idea. But I'm still you know, introducing some of that old music, to reintroducing it to Zig, you know, because I mean, for so many years, you know, even when the original band would get together, we would only play a certain song list.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, man, we need to be playing some of these other songs, you know. And you know, a couple of years ago, the running partners, I asked my guys, I said, out of frustration, I said, man, I have 27 meter songs that we recorded, never played live. I want to record these. I want to re-record these songs. Well, we got 16 of them recorded.
Oh, that's great.
And I released that album. I think that one was called Can't Beat the Funk.
Cool. Can't Beat the Funk, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, and the record has 14 songs on it. The other two I gave away on my website, georgeporterjr.com. And you can download those two songs there. And then, you know, Louisiana Music Factory, you can buy. And I think it's on Homegrown Music Network or something.
Oh, yeah, right. Cool. Homegrown.
Yeah, make sure to check that out.
You know, and it's some good music, you know. And I'm going to fix y'all up a little care package. When I get home, I'm going to send y'all some music.
Cool. That'd be great.
Well,
and thank you for all the music you've always sent us through the airways over the last, you know, 40 years or, you know, plus.
Thank you for all your influences, all your playing. And, you know, though you said Warren was the busiest man, my, you know, 25 years going down to Jazz Fest, you're doing 3-night gigs all, you know, weekend long, all 2 weeks long. So, man, I don't know about that, but I really appreciate you coming up here, George. Thank you so much. Looking forward to hearing you kicking it with the boys on New Year's Eve as well. So
thank you very much.
With that one, we'll say thank you and call it a day. Thanks, Swamp Daddy.
It's been our pleasure.
All right.
You're right.
Yeah, you're right. Man.